1 o'clock, having arrived, I'm going to call the March 2nd, 2022 meeting of the House Taxes Committee to order. And Ms. Griska, if you would please take the roll.
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt present.
Representative Marquardt present. Representative Lisselgard.
Lisselgard present.
Representative Lisselgard present. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Representative Davids present. Representative Agbaje.
Present.
Representative Agbaje present. Representative Carlson.
Carlson is present.
Representative Carlson present. Representative Detmer.
Detmer present.
Representative Detmer present. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo present.
Representative Garofalo present. Representative Gomez.
Gomez present.
Representative Gomez present. Representative Herr.
Present.
Representative Herr present. Representative Hertas.
Hertas present.
Representative Hertas present. Representative Howard. Representative McDonald. Representative Miller.
Miller present.
Representative Miller present. Representative Moran.
Present.
Representative Moran present. Representative Mortensen.
Present.
Representative Mortensen present. Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Robbins present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Sandell present. Representative Schultz.
Present.
Representative Schultz present. Representative Stevenson.
Present.
Representative Stevenson present. Representative Swazinski. Representative Joachim.
Present.
Representative Joachim present. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griska. Next, we have approval of the minutes for February 24th, 2022. Representative Lisselgard, would you like to move those approvals?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lisselgard moves approval of the February 24th, 2022 minutes of the House Taxes Committee. Any discussion? If not, I'm going to move to the vote. If you would temporarily unmute yourself. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The February 24th, 2022 minutes of the House Taxes Committee are approved. And again, we are operating under House Rules 10.01 for remote hearings, and members of the public may go to the House of Representatives, go to committees and divisions, go to the House Taxes Committee, and to the right-hand side, lower right-hand side, you'll find all the materials. And also, when meetings are held, it is made public notice for anyone who may want to testify also. So with that, we have two bills today, both Representative Joachim's bills. So Chair Joachim, would you like to move House File 3688?
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Yes, I'd like to move House File 3688 before the committee.
Very good. Please proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and members, for hearing the Historic Tax Credit bill today. The Historic Tax Credit was set to sunset in 2021, and I would like to thank this committee for the work you did last session and extending it for one more year. That one-year extension will expire on June 30th, 2022. This bill extends the Historic Tax Credit for eight more years in accordance with our new provision that limits tax expenditures to 8 years. The bill provides a smoother transition by returning to the 2019 legislation that allows for one full payment once the qualified rehabilitated building is placed in service, instead of spreading that payment out for over 5 years. And in Section 5, we also include a purpose statement so that future legislators will be able to understand the goals of the Historic Tax Credit. The credit stabilizes and defines the unique character of our communities, especially our small towns and main streets across the state. The construction workforce that is employed on the Historic Tax Credit reaches way beyond the borders of the cities who have the projects. For example, projects that take place in Minneapolis and St. Paul proper still have reach beyond their borders, with crews coming from throughout the greater 15-county metropolitan area. The historic tax credit creates opportunities for small business entrepreneurship and development, as well as results in new employment opportunities in the completed buildings. Including in your packets is the University of Minnesota Extension Service's recent report on the economic impact of projects leveraged by the Minnesota Historic Rehabilitation Tax Credit for the fiscal year of 2021. Some of the highlights when I read the report that jumped out are the $1.4 billion of future economic activity generated by the 2021 projects that also included 9,600 jobs. There was about $890 million of spending planned by project developers. And over the entire 10 years that this important credit has been in place here in Minnesota, there's been $5 billion in economic activity generated. It supported 28,000 jobs and $1.9 billion in labor income. Additionally, 50% of the credit costs are repaid immediately after completed construction, because the state historic tax credit must be paired with the use of federal historic tax credit. These projects also bring into the state federal financial resources that wouldn't otherwise be tapped. In your packets, you also find letters of support from the Minnesota Realtors, the League of Minnesota Cities, and the City of Rochester. My watch keeps beeping at me. I have a few testifiers here to walk through the bill and explain the benefits of extending the historic tax credit. They will each only take a few minutes, but very important to hear their voices. I have with me Taylor Smirikarova, Director of Property Development at Redesign, David Ibarra, President of Minnesota Pipe Trades Association, and Dr. Heidi Swank, the Executive Director at Rethos. So with that, members, I will turn it over to the testifiers.
Well, thank you very much, Chair Joachim. And before we move to the testifiers, I'd like to give the revenue estimate. So the revenue estimate for House File 3688 for fiscal 2023 is $31.8 million. For 24, it's $14.6 million. And for 25, it is $19.7 million. So we have Taylor Smirikarova and then David Ibarra on deck. So please introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
Awesome. Trying to get my screen here. Okay, awesome. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Taylor Smikarva. I'm Director of Property Development at Sewer Redesign. Thank you for having me, and I appreciate your time today. So Sewer Redesign is a community development corporation that's dedicated to improving the Seward and Greater Longfellow neighborhoods of South Minneapolis. The Twin Cities and Minnesota overall has an incredible program in the historic tax credit. It enables developers like myself to partner with communities and preserve and reuse community assets. This program creates jobs with our communities, not just for tradespeople, but local developers, architects, marketers, and more. Many projects would not otherwise be feasible without this source, and so we greatly appreciate the extension that's previously been granted and look forward to further extensions. Part of our mission at Seward Redesign as the local community development corporation is to invest in community sustainability. That is possible in both a carbon footprint sense and also the community itself and their histories and their futures. The carbon footprint is better served when it's reused instead of demolishing a building and rebuilding it new and spending lots of money on the material it takes to build new. And so the historic tax credit allows us to buy property that exists and then redevelop it and make it affordable to small businesses that are in our service area, and then just keep the community having access to that site, but also, again, at affordable rental rate because we've used the source. And then finally, I will, as has been previously said, it creates about $10 of economic development for every $1 invested by the state. So I believe it is an awesome tool for that purpose, and I'm happy to stay on for questions or testify more.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And I would ask all the testifiers to stick around because we'll take questions towards the end. So next is David Ybarra and then Aaron Berg. Please proceed, introduce yourself, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. My name is David Ybarra. I am president of the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association, an umbrella organization representing 11 affiliated unions and more than 9,000 men and women working in the piping-related industries throughout the state of Minnesota. I'm here today to speak in support of House File 3688, a bill that will extend the sunset on Minnesota's historic tax credit. The state historic tax credit is an enormous driver of job creation in our state. The credit has supported more than 28,000 jobs since 2011. Many of these jobs have been for tradespeople. In 2021 alone, the credit supported more than 9,000 jobs, including more than 6,000 jobs directly impacted by the credit. Our union members rely on the jobs created through historic building reuse for their livelihoods and to provide for their families. Last year alone, the credit generated more than $693 million in labor income. Construction is one of the state's main industries and constitutes 5% of jobs across the state. As many development projects have been impacted by the uncertainty of COVID-19, it is more vital than ever that legislation exists to protect and continue well-paying jobs across the state. Job creation in communities means increased investment in these communities. The money that is paid to craft workers is used to generate local economies, going out to dinner, getting haircuts, supporting small business are all examples of how historic tax credit projects work to revitalize the communities they're based in. The Minnesota Pipe Trades Association stands strongly in support of programs like this that create and maintain positive economic impacts across Minnesota. I humbly urge you to support extending the tax credit as well. Our families and neighbors across the state depend on it. Thank you for allowing me to testify this afternoon.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, we have Aaron Berg, and you have a video you're going to share with us. And then on deck is Dr. Heidi Swank. So go ahead and you want to speak to it and then share the video or ever which way you want to do that.
Yeah, I was just going to give a brief introduction. I'm Erin Hannifenberg. I'm the policy and deputy director at Rethos Places Reimagined. And we do have just a brief video that I will cue up and share with you. And then I will kick it over to our executive director, Dr. Heidi Swank.
So let me make that sure. Sounds very good.
It's going to work. Right. Here we go.
The thing that makes downtown special in the greater Minnesota area is each city has its own character. They're all unique and they all have their own flavor. Being able to tell a story is vital and part of the character of a city, especially in part of a building or in part of a community or an environment. I don't believe in just demolishing or throwing things away. For me, it's awesome to see something that was once great and then had become decayed or blighted to be restored, but used in a new way.
We've done some data research that Moorhead and Clay County is a top five fastest growing county in the state of Minnesota, and one of the only ones outside of the metro. So we're seeing a tremendous amount of growth. What we found early on is that there wasn't many people living in downtown. And for us to be successful as an urban community, we needed people. And the Simon Warehouse is a prime example of a building that sat, you know, vacant and kind of almost abandoned for so many years. This was, in our sense, is a catalytic project for our downtown growth.
Campus View Apartments are the two recently renovated apartment buildings in Fergus Falls. You know, quite honestly, without the historic tax credit, I really don't know that a project like this would be undertaken. There's such an emotional connection between the community and these buildings. During the actual demo and renovation, a lot of that was held in the community. We used a lot of the local lumber yards, a lot of the local skilled labor for carpentry, for plumbing.
For us, this is all community-based. We've just finished our downtown master plan. We had tremendous amounts of public engagement. Our development community is small. We're not, you know, attracting national developers or even, you know, broad-scale regional developers. These are people right in our backyard that are making this investment in our community.
I would definitely encourage other developers to take a look at buildings in their backyard, in their communities. I think that it's unfortunate that we are losing so many of our historic buildings. the way that they were made speaks volumes about the commitment to quality from that time period and just the grace that's given to these buildings. They're just outstanding. And I think it's very important to try and retain as much of that as possible.
When we talk about historical tax credits, you're talking about revitalizing the character of a city or a space, and you're talking about the historical importance of a building. And to me, not only is it like storytelling, but it's also about the heritage.
To see a breath of new life come into these old buildings and people to be proud of them once again is really impactful. It makes a significant difference in how the community perceives their urban area, how they perceive their town. I think if the historic tax credits were to sunset and it wasn't to be extended, you would see less businesses or developers take a chance. Having access to historic tax credits is one of the only reasons why this project and others happen across the state.
Representative Joaquin, I'm watching this video. I mean, I can tell you are a seasoned legislator. I'm watching this video, and right from the start, I think I recognize a lot of these buildings. And of course, it's the city of Moorhead. Well, technically, I do not represent the city of Moorhead. It's right next door. So I tell you, that's effective. Very, very good. Appreciated watching that. So thank you, Ms. Berg, for doing that. Also, Representative Swazinski is now in attendance. Representative Joaquin, you got anything? That was this deliberately set to have Moorhead and right by
you? No, actually, Mr. Video? Chair, they have a wonderful video about Ely too, which I've been up to that project. And I also have seen the projects and the project in Fergus Falls. I believe it's on the Kirkbride Hospital campus. So no, that was not intentional. They've just done a lot of great projects across Minnesota.
All right, thank you. So I've got a couple of questions here. Chair Davids.
Chair Marquardt, it was intentional. I'm sure it was, and I'd sure like it if they did one for Preston, but I just want to speak very strongly in support of this bill. I really think this program has worked very, very well, and I really think we need to continue it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, all of us have towns, whether we live or have towns close that have buildings like that. So, you know, I definitely, you know, support this and extending the tax credit. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. I just wanted to say thank you to Chair Joaquin for bringing the bill forward again. You know, I talk a lot with my city who shares with me what they think works really well and what doesn't work well. And for them, this historic tax credit is something that we value very much in the city of St. Paul. And we know that since 2010, the state has leveraged more than $1.9 billion in developer investment, which is a good thing. But I just want to share one quick experience that I actually went to an opening of a new school in my district, and historic tax credits were actually used for that building. And that is the school that was open is the only Korean immersion school in the entire upper Midwest area. And that entire development project was done by a developer of color using, you know, union labor. And so I'm really appreciative that they were able to utilize this tax credit. Otherwise, that building and that project would not have been completed. So I just wanted to share that one story and to just thank again, Chair Joaquin, for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you very much. So, Ms. Berg, anything more you want to add before we go to Dr. Swank?
No, nothing from me, Mr. Chair, just Heidi's testimony.
Very good. Thank you. So then we have Dr. Swank, and then Sean Smith is on deck.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and representatives. My name is Heidi Swank. I am the executive director of REFOS. An organization that works to retain our historic, naturally occurring affordable housing, help homeowners maintain their homes, and ensure access to tools to reuse our existing buildings, whether they're modest or magnificent. I also serve as the president of the Revitalize MN Coalition. This is an organization made up of architectural historians, history lovers, architects, and many others, and was formed to advocate specifically for the Minnesota State Historic Tax Credit. So I'm here today to talk about House File 3688, a bill to extend the sunset of Minnesota's Historic Structure Rehabilitation Tax Credit, otherwise known as our Historic Tax Credit. Since 2010, the over 170 completed tax credit projects across Minnesota have generated $5 billion in economic activity and provided important leverage in funding public services through increased property taxes and adding buildings back onto tax rolls. The impact of the historic tax credit is particularly dramatic in greater Minnesota, where every single dollar of tax credit invested yields more than $16 in economic activity. As a brief history, the State Historic Tax Credit was originally passed in 2010 through a bipartisan effort to address job losses during the Great Recession. The bill was initially passed with a five-year sunset. In 2013, just 2 years into the program, we could already see its positive impacts. So we returned to the Capitol and encouraged you to extend the sunset date past 2015. Thanks to Chair Marquardt and others, the program was extended 8 years from that point to 2021. During this extension period, we continued to return to the legislature to share the positive impacts of this program. Last year, amidst the uncertainty of the COVID pandemic, legislative leaders passed a one-year extension, pushing the sunset date to June of this year. While a critical step to maintaining the program last year was that extension, another one-year extension will undermine the efficacy and impact of the program, not to mention causing increased costs to the state of Minnesota. An eight-year extension gives communities, developers, and local governments the time and security they need to pursue historic redevelopment. The State Historic Tax Credit mirrors the Federal Historic Tax Credit, and when used in conjunction, they provide vital funding to projects that might have trouble procuring funding elsewhere. Prior to the state's tax credit passing in 2010, we were seeing maybe 2 to 3 federal historic tax credit projects per year. But as soon as the state historic tax credit was put in place, those numbers jumped to 10 to 15 a year. This means that not only were more projects being completed, but because the tax credit is tied to the federal historic tax credit, the amount of federal dollars returning to Minnesota increased fivefold. Moreover, in 2021 alone, 34 projects were approved. We can see that the need for this tax credit remains and the demand for it has actually grown. We still have a lot of work to do to keep our buildings out of landfills, and this tax credit is an excellent tool for accomplishing this. I urge your support of House File 3688 as one of the most effective and efficient tools that will directly impact jobs, economic development, and the environment across our state. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that testimony. Next up is Sean Smith.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sean Smith. I'm the Public Policy Committee Chair for NAIOP Minnesota, and NAIOP is the leading commercial real estate organization for property owners and developers. And in this role, I am a volunteer serving my industry. We really view ourselves as providing the physical infrastructure for all of the businesses that operate in the state of Minnesota. I am here to support the bill that's before you that extends the Historic Structure Rehabilitation Credit, and really for a few reasons. First, I just wanted to give some background as to why having a longer committed term for this credit is important. It's the simple fact is that these historic buildings are really challenging to work with in a regulation environment that has evolved since these buildings were built. And the cost for these renovations is high. So naturally the diligence timeline is just simply longer. And it's not uncommon to have 6 to 12 months or even more timeframe to really understand the viability of the buildings and prepare for a feasible plan that actually works for the use in that building. So, and then on top of this diligence timeframe, the State Historic Preservation Office that handles the applications for the credit recommends that they take an additional 7 months for the review of your application. So it really is a long time frame, and the entrepreneurs that pursue these buildings provide time and a lot of money just on the investigation. So if you don't know that this credit is still available, I don't know how you would make these investments in these historic buildings. So having this longer committed timeline is a very important key to this. And second, I would say most of our members live and work in the metro area. We also do have quite a few that live and or work in greater Minnesota. Personally, growing up in southern Minnesota, I still frequent that area and take 169 and I pass through St. Peter, Mankato, Winnebago, and Blue Earth. And all of these communities, that road is right in the middle of all of the downtowns that these communities kind of call home. And so I know that from some of our members, they're actually trying to do work in the city of Red Wing and Windham or Winona. And those cities are proactively trying to attract new users, capitalize on these new mobile workforce. And so that they're trying to expand the downtown historic districts. And so this credit really is a huge tool for these communities to utilize. And they can really put these buildings back into a productive tax paying use for the community. So I want to thank you, Chair Joachim and Representative Davids, for putting this bill forward. And I sincerely appreciate the time allotted today and will certainly make myself available for questions should there be any. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to testify that might not have signed up? Okay, next I'd like to go, are there any questions for the testifiers from any members? All right, so members, Representative Detmer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if it's just for the testifiers, but my question is, I know a facility that has a very historic building, dates back to World War I. It's a veterans camp, it's in my district, and it's a 501c3 facility. Do they qualify for this tax break?
Which testifier, I think, would like to answer that? Would the 501c3 qualify?
I can take a stab at that, Mr. Chair.
All right, Ms. Berg, please proceed.
Yes, so Representative Detmer, I think it can be done. It's complicated because this is an income tax credit. It has to be an income-producing property. And so it has to have some, you know, kind of rental use or other occupancy. And then, you know, it has to be a taxable entity as well. But there have been partnerships that, that, you know, 501c3 organizations have worked out with other taxpaying entities to make use of the historic tax credit. And then there has been actually multiple years in a row now federal tax legislation introduced that would actually better enable 501c3s to be able to use the historic tax credit. That's called the Historic Tax Credit Growth and Opportunity Act, something that we've advocated for and supported at the federal level, which if it passed, we would love to see that mirrored here in Minnesota as well.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. You know, this facility dates, thank you, Mr. Chair. This facility dates back to World War I, as I mentioned. It was an overflow for the VA hospital back in the day. And it's been now as a campground. And so it does charge admissions and so forth. So anyway, I'll check into it. Thank you so much.
Representative Detmer, where is that located again?
On Big Marine Lake.
Oh, okay.
Just about 12 miles east of Forest Lake. And it's a great camp. And in the past, we've been making some improvements there through the legislature, through the legacy funds, and through other means too. So anyway, thank you.
Yep, thank you, Representative Detmer. Any other questions for the testifiers? If not, any comments or thoughts on House File 3688? Chair Joaquim, closing comments, House File 3688.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I know we've had this bill up before you a few times now, so I know that you all have heard the pitch before. The Historic Tax Credit plays a really important role in all of our communities. It has the data to back it up with the U of M Extension Service report, what a successful credit it's been in spurring economic development, creating jobs, and enhancing communities. And I would love to have your support for this bill as we move forward. Thank you.
Very good. Would you like to renew your motion, Chair Joaquim?
I renew my motion that House File 3688 be laid over for possible inclusion in a tax bill.
Thank you very much. We're going to move to the next bill. Chair Joaquim, do you want to move House File 3574?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Sorry, just moving papers around. I didn't want to annoy everybody. Yes, I move House File 3574 before the committee for discussion.
Very good. To be laid over for possible inclusion. Very good. Proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just trying to get to my notes here.
That's fine. I'll let you get organized. I got to get my notes out also here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for hearing House File 3571. This bill moves the income calculation for the education tax credit from household income to adjusted gross income. Currently, the credit begins to phase out at household income of about $33,500 for a family with one child. This bill does not change this income level, but by changing how the income is calculated, it is estimated that over 1,800 additional families would qualify for the credit, with some seeing an increase in their credit as well. The education tax credit helps families pay for after-school and summer educational opportunities, school supplies, tutoring, computer hardware, musical instruments, and much more. In 2019, the K-12 education credit totaled $7.2 million for 28,700 returns. It is a program that reaches every area of our state. With me today, I have a few testifiers to explain the program and give firsthand testimony of the benefits they've seen from the education tax credit. And that's Matt Norris, who's a policy director at Minnesota After School Advance at Youth Prize. And then Anissa Meyer, who's a parent from Minnetonka's used the tax credit for her family.
Very good. So we'll go to our first testifier, Matt Norris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name. Please proceed.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Norris, and I'm the policy director and director of Minnesota After School Advance at Youth Prize. We strongly support the simple but important change proposed by House File 3574 and thank Representative Joaquim for bringing it forward. The Minnesota After School Advance program that I lead helps families in over 200 cities across Minnesota use this tax credit to pay for after school and summer activities, along with computers for school. Last week when I testified before you, I described the dramatic surge in demand that we've seen from families because of the academic challenges that Minnesota students are facing right now. Shifting to using federal adjusted gross income to calculate the eligibility, rather than the more complex household income definition, would make it easier for families to get the assistance their students need. As Representative Joaquim mentioned, the income limit for the maximum credit right now is $33,500. From our experience, that means the typical taxpayer using this tax credit is oftentimes a single parent juggling multiple jobs at one time and primarily focused just on the daily struggle to try to meet the family's basic needs. They often have limited formal education and they may not speak English as a first language or at all. Oftentimes, they often have limited familiarity with taxes and tax filing and our tax system, and they're reliant on others to guide them through the tax filing process. Combine those factors together, and navigating the current household income definition is a steep barrier to a family simply looking to get their students some tutoring or a computer. For example, just one of the items included in the definition is, and I quote, the amount of a passive activity loss that is not disallowed as a result of section 469, paragraph I or M of the Internal Revenue Code, and the amount of passive activity loss carryover allowed under section 469B of the Internal Revenue Code, end quote. Now, with all due respect, I'm guessing that many of you, even as esteemed members of the Tax Committee, aren't sure sitting here today if you have anything that you would need to report under that item. I know I'm not sure, even with a law degree. Now, imagine the taxpayer I previously described trying to process all of that. Other elements of the definition lack any logical consistency. For instance, MFIT payments count toward the income limit, but SNAP benefits do not. The result is a daunting maze that we do our best to help families navigate. We currently employ 3 part-time community navigators who spend a significant portion of their time helping families work through this definition to determine their eligibility, and we're in the process of hiring a 4th. This is in addition to the network of community-based organizations all across the state that we've trained to help families as well. In contrast, federal adjusted gross income is a single number on the annual tax return that we can point families to. Over time, the state has been gradually phasing out the household income definition for these tax credits. Just a few years ago, the legislature shifted the dependent care credit from household income to AGI. It's time we make the same change for the K-12 education tax credit as well. While we also still believe we need to update the income limit for this tax credit that hasn't been changed in 25 years, this bill is an important first step toward making this tax credit more fair and accessible for the Minnesota taxpayers it's intended to serve. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up is Niece Meyer.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin with your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Anissa Mire, and I'm one of the parents who used the tax credit last year. So my son, the first before we start for math museum, I took them cellophane and we take the test, and they told me like his like math were 4th grade and 3 months, and he was actually 4th grade, and they told me he does not need it for like more tutoring or anything. And then I got this program. When I had this program, I took them to the math museum in Minnetonka. And then after like, because it was pandemic and the kids, they stay home. So I was scared. I was not teaching them good, you know, because the teacher, they give you homework and you have to go with them. And I took them after a couple of months for math museum. I mean, Sullivan again, and I tested him. And they told him like his test was like almost 10th grade. I thought it was 10th grade, but he told me 11th grade. But like eight months he go in there, he can be like almost a couple of grades. So I really appreciate you guys. We get this program. So it helps us a lot as a community.
Thank you so much for taking the time to testify today. Would anyone else who was not on the list to testify would like to testify? I don't see any. Members, any questions for the testifiers? See none. Any members, any questions or comments on House File 3574? Chair Joachim, final comments on House File 3574.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for listening to this important bill today. As Mr. Norris explained, it is a very complicated system for people to figure out what household income is. And just simply moving to AGI would not only help parents out, but increase the use of this really important tax credit. And I want to thank Ms. Merritt for coming and explaining how she's used it in her family. I hope that we can also look at raising that income level, because we really do need to provide some help and services to parents and their children in making sure that their kids are on the right track. That helps all of us. There are many areas where we need to increase investments in our children's education, from full funding for funding full-service community schools to investing in support professionals in our classrooms and everything in between. But this is just one way we can support our parents as they invest in their children's success. So I ask for your support.
Chair Joaquin, thank you for bringing this forward. And Chair Joaquin renews her motion to lay over House File 3574 for possible inclusion into the House Omnibus Tax Bill. Thank you all, testifiers, members. That concludes our work for today. Tomorrow we've got two bills up. Representative Nelson N. has a farm fencing material sales tax bill up. And then the chair has a bill up on doing away with some more June accelerated payments. So all of that excitement tomorrow. So members, with that, thank you for your work today. We are adjourned.